At precisely 9 a.m. each morning, the muffled voice of a woman can be heard greeting her comrades across the border. The source, this wall of 48 speakers built in 1967, then proceeds to broadcast a series of pop songs. The comrades she's referring to are not Korean, but Chinese. And the woman, the late Taiwanese pop star Teresa Tang. This three-story propaganda station lies on the northwestern tip of one of Taiwan's Kinmen Islands, just 3 miles from the Chinese mainland and an hour by plane from Taipei. Kinmen, in other words, lies on the most fraught edge of an already fraught region. In fact, not once but twice has it successfully repelled Chinese invasions, in 1949 and 50. But while the Korean border has largely remained frozen in time, a combustible buffer zone that few dare cross, this one has changed dramatically. Today, this is what life looks like in the sleepy villages of Kinmen, home to about 100,000 people. On the other side of the narrow channel that divides them, and visible to the naked eye, this is the Chinese city of Xiamen, population 5 million. As China's economic and military strength has grown, Taiwan has been forced to confront its vulnerability. Kinmen would be among the first and easiest territory to capture, possibly in a matter of hours. Simple pragmatism, therefore, has slowly transformed this frontier from a highly fortified garrison to a kind of commercialized museum. Once home to 100,000 troops, a mere 3,000 remain today. In their place, 984,000 tourists, most of them Chinese, arrived in 2019 alone, spending about $360 million and then returning by way of a 20-minute ferry. The broadcast station still plays propaganda, but at a much lower volume, and only for the benefit of tourists. Meanwhile, this tiny patch of land, little more than a rock, is one of its few active military bases. Its usefulness was recently questioned after it struggled to shoot down a small consumer Chinese drone. Now, make no mistake, an attack on Taiwan's main island of Formosa would be no easy feat. The landscape is mountainous, the 80-mile journey treacherous, and the weather frequently uncooperative. Still, the extreme vulnerability of Kinmen is a powerful reminder of Taiwan's dependence on the elephant in the room, the United States. Sponsored by Nebula, the streaming platform created and owned by creators. For just $2.50 a month, you can get access to our entire catalog of early, bonus, and original videos. In August 2021, President Biden surprised everyone when he told ABC, quote, "We made a sacred commitment that if anyone were to invade our NATO allies, we would respond. Same with Japan, same with South Korea, same with Taiwan." At best, some argued, this was evidence of Biden's declining mental acuity. At worst, it was intentional, and therefore irresponsible, even dangerous. Others celebrated this long-awaited momentous announcement. But nearly everyone seemed to agree on one thing. This was a big deal. Here's why. In 1949, the Chinese Nationalist Party, led by Chiang Kai-shek, lost the civil war to the communists and fled to what we now call the island of Taiwan. Despite this loss, the United States continued to recognize it as the sole government of China for the next 30 years. During that time, the two countries signed a mutual defense treaty, promising to protect one another in case of an attack. American troops were even stationed in Taiwan. That treaty ended in 1980 after the US switched recognition to the People's Republic on the mainland. In its place, Congress passed the Taiwan Relations Act, which obligates Washington to do two things. First, sell the island weapons, quote, sufficient to maintain its self-defense capability. And second, maintain the capacity to resist any force that would jeopardize the security or social or economic system of the people on Taiwan. In other words, Biden was not strictly correct. The United States does not have the same sacred commitment to defend Taiwan as it does with Japan, South Korea, NATO, and others. It has the option, of course, but not the obligation. Still, perhaps he simply misspoke. As many were quick to point out, it wouldn't be the first time. Then, the same thing happened just 2 months later. And again in May. Each time, the White House issued a statement saying nothing had really changed. And each time, they became less and less persuasive. Finally, in September, Biden went a step further, clarifying that American troops would respond. After four increasingly specific statements in a row, no one could write these off with a straight face as just mistakes. Politicians, analysts, and journalists announced the death of America's four-decade-long policy of refusing to say whether or not it would defend Taiwan called strategic ambiguity, established by Jimmy Carter and upheld by every president since. But not so fast. When Carter signed the Taiwan Relations Act in 1979, America didn't promise to defend Taiwan. That much is true. Less well-remembered is that it also didn't support Taiwanese independence. It didn't even, believe it or not, oppose its unification with China. In fact, it was widely assumed that it eventually would. Washington's attitude was, "This is for you two to figure out." The only thing it actually opposed were unilateral changes to the status quo. In plain English, anything that wasn't peacefully agreed to by both sides. Now, this may ring hollow. Surely America wasn't just some neutral, disinterested third party. But the ultimate test of whether it's sincerely committed to the status quo or just using it to undermine its communist adversary is, does it only oppose China's attempts to change the status quo, or does it also oppose Taiwan's? The answer is that whenever Taiwan has even flirted with the idea of independence, America has sprung into action. Far from cheerleading for that outcome, it moves to prevent it by occasionally intervening in the country's democratic politics to a degree that would make many Americans uncomfortable. George Bush, for example, criticized Taiwan's president for making relatively minor symbolic moves toward independence in the early 2000s. The Bush administration felt this so important that it defied intense bipartisan outrage for taking China's side. What's truly amazing about the status quo is how long it's persisted despite being no one's preference. Unification is one of China's oldest and most important political projects. The people of Taiwan are stuck in diplomatic limbo, denied the very real benefits of international representation. And most Americans would prefer this vibrant democracy receive the full recognition it deserves. But the guiding principle behind American policy since 1979 is that, deeply unsatisfying as it is, the status quo is the least bad alternative. The way it's maintained this delicate balance for 44 years is by creating room for both China and Taiwan to believe time is on their side. The trick is that no individual Chinese or Taiwanese leader needs to immediately unify or declare independence, respectively. They just can't afford to lose that future possibility. On any given day, forcing unification or declaring independence would be an extremely risky gamble. Thus, both leaders have an interest in delaying. Put differently, the two sides of the strait do much of the work of preserving peace by wearing rose-colored glasses, seeing what they want to see. Washington's only job is to paint a picture abstract enough that each side can simultaneously interpret it in a favorable, self-interested way. What makes this simple task so challenging is that it's a continual process. Whenever America perceives a change in this balance, either from Taiwan drifting toward independence or China gaining in strength, it steps in to re-establish the equilibrium. Reagan spelled out a version of this principle in a 1982 memo, saying the quantity and quality of arms provided to Taiwan should be conditioned entirely on the threat posed by the PRC. In other words, the US hasn't written Taiwan a blank check to militarize. It sells exactly what's required to maintain a comfortable balance of power. Nothing more, nothing less. And in the last decade or so, the balance has shifted unmistakably in China's favor. First, America has successfully stigmatized independence in Taiwan. No prominent politician has advocated for it in years. And second, not only has the size and strength of the Chinese military grown, but the party has taken a more aggressive tone under Xi Jinping. Add to that the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and you can see why Biden might feel the need to act decisively to restore the balance. So, in the most straightforward sense, what he said was new and significant. In the broader context of America's attempts to maintain a balance, he was only recalibrating a policy unchanged since 1979. One thing to keep in mind is that strategic ambiguity has never been official US policy. This term has always been an unofficial description of how journalists and academics perceive US policy. The Taiwan Relations Act doesn't state, "We may or may not defend Taiwan." It just doesn't say anything. Besides, ambiguity and clarity aren't binary options. They're opposite ends of a spectrum. The answer to a question on 60 Minutes is less credible than a comment made during an official speech, which is less credible than a commitment formalized in a treaty. Ultimately, the question, would the US defend Taiwan, can only be answered by the sitting president. And because the particular location and circumstances matter, Biden was effectively speculating out loud about his own anticipated reaction. Anyone who claims he shifted to a policy of complete clarity is either overlooking or presuming the answer to difficult questions. Questions like how would he respond to an invasion only of Kinmen? It and other so-called indefensible outlying islands were specifically excluded from its former defense treaty. Hypotheticals like these may sound tedious and trivial, but it's exactly these red lines, or their absence, that determine a commitment's credibility. To summarize, Biden has no doubt moved in the direction of clarity, but there remain plenty of uncertainties. But hold on. More important than what Biden said, how he meant it, or why, is what effect it has. We don't need to assess anyone's intentions or debate whether this represents a change in US policy to determine whether these actions increased or decreased the likelihood of conflict. So self-obsessed is the world of US foreign policy that it's easy to forget something extremely basic. China already assumes it would defend Taiwan. Military Strategy 101 dictates that the People's Liberation Army must expect and prepare for American intervention. Anything else would be dangerously reckless. And indeed, many of the weapons Beijing has invested most heavily in are aimed at, in the words of the Pentagon, denying third-party intervention. You can probably guess the identity of that third party. In other words, it's very unlikely that a verbal commitment from Biden would fundamentally alter Beijing's calculus. Whatever it planned to do before, it probably still plans to do now. But it's not so much the content of the president's comments that likely worries China. It's their tone. Tellingly, the Chinese Foreign Ministry's reaction was to warn against sending the, quote, wrong signals to the separatist forces of Taiwan independence. To translate, it was the implication that concerned China, not so much the words themselves. Since the very beginning of the two countries' relationship, China has been deeply suspicious that America is only using Taiwan as a way to undermine it. Armed with this underlying distrust, it's extremely sensitive to any indication that America is abandoning the status quo and moving in the direction of independence. Ironically, the last 44 years of peace proved that all three parties want the same thing. At least, they're willing to tolerate the same thing. But Biden's comments inadvertently feed into Beijing's suspicions. Fearing this is the beginning of a trend toward independence, China tries to credibly demonstrate its concern by reacting assertively. The US then interprets these often quite dangerous moves as a challenge to the peaceful equilibrium and acts to offset the change, which again prompts China to react. It's this spiral of escalating reactions that most worries experts. It's how both countries could veer into a conflict that neither one wants. As Cornell professor Jessica Chen Weiss has said, the challenge is figuring out how to deter China without provoking it into action or validating its fears. Fortunately, we're not stuck between the choice of either capitulating to China or needlessly escalating tensions. For over four decades, America has sold Taiwan billions of dollars worth of its best weapons, proving that it can maintain peace without inciting war. Remember, the time-tested approach is to ensure that A, tomorrow perpetually feels like a better time to act drastically than today, and B, both countries are reassured that their worst case remains improbable. One way to accomplish the former is to increase the cost of an attack by investing in the right defenses. Currently, Taiwan is incentivized to buy a few expensive and flashy things like submarines and fighter jets. Purchases like these help boost morale and project an image of toughness to voters. But experts consistently argue a more effective approach would involve a large number of little things. This strategy, sometimes called a porcupine or overall defense concept, could include laying mines, building anti-ship defenses, or stockpiling resources in case of a blockade. None of these actions would cross any of China's red lines. The US already sells weapons, but they would help strengthen Taiwan's defenses. Now, there is another elephant in the room we should address. Biden's recent comments are representative of an unspoken bipartisan consensus that a Chinese invasion is inevitable or even imminent. If has slowly become when, a mindset that encourages quick and sometimes reckless action. Reality is much more complicated. Much of the evidence supporting this belief is the result of misunderstandings or mistranslations of Chinese speeches. Only China would initiate a war, and therefore only by uncovering the specific forces at play in China can you truly understand the probability of conflict, which is why I've made this video doing just that. In it, we take a closer look at all the evidence for and against a near-term invasion and get to the bottom of China's timeline. It won't be available on YouTube until August, but you can watch it right now on Nebula, our independent streaming platform where you can also find my 6-part exclusive series, China Actually. There, we explore topics like how Chinese censorship is both more and less pervasive than we often imagine, and why the country came to dominate the world of the rare earth metals ubiquitous in modern technology. Nebula is also home to other fantastic originals like real-life lore's Modern Conflicts, explaining the wars we often hear about but rarely have time to untangle. In Great Cities, City Beautiful walks you through how Shanghai built the world's largest metro system, along with other wonders of the modern metropolis. Nebula is the absolute best place to watch my videos. There are no ads, sponsors, algorithms, or upgrades, just great videos all the time. Now, normally Nebula costs $5 a month, but you can get it for 50% off, just $2.50 a month, by signing up for a year with a link on screen or in the description below. You won't find a better deal in streaming.